The other thing that's been really successful with me, but you need to play it strategically, is a really good, are we breaking up email? I will tell you, the number of people, when you change the default setting to, I'm going to leave you alone, to, I'll keep following up, that's when I also see a lot of people actually have their ears perk up because they're like, oh, wait, I've ignored this person for too long. She's walking away. So for you to change the default setting and the default is no, sometimes that's get people to respond.
Tap into the minds of change makers creating real impact on people and our planet. It's time to live your purpose. I'm your host, Dale Wilkinson, and this is Goodmakers. Hey, what is up? Thanks for tuning into episode 54 of Goodmakers. If you're a regular listener, welcome back, friend, and a big hello if you're here for the first time. Each week, I bring you a new conversation that I had with a social entrepreneur or mission-driven thought leader about how they've built a career or a company around a cause that they care about and how you can do that too. So hit subscribe right now and you'll be notified each time a new episode drops. And if you're looking for meaningful work, then head on over to goodgigs.app where you'll find the latest full-time, freelance, and remote jobs with companies creating a positive impact in the world. This episode, I speak with Karen Goldfeder, who is the former VP of Business Development for DoSomething.org, a nonprofit organization that helps youth get involved with campaigns for social change. Karen breaks down what the job of a business development professional entails and how it differs from a sales position. She also shares with us effective techniques on how to do a cold outreach to people or companies you want to partner with. I loved this chat I had with Karen, and you will too. So let's jump into my conversation with Karen Goldfeder. Karen, I'm so glad to have you on the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well. Thank you so much for having me.
You are in Italy at the moment, and it is 11 p.m. at night over there, and you look raring to go. So this will be fun.
Yeah, well, my background prior to joining Do Something was always in the theater. So I am very akin to late nights, all that good stuff. So 11 p.m. in Italy, feeling good.
Yeah. And it's summer. But this is a great place to start. Where did your career begin? And did you always want to be involved in the social impact space?
So it wasn't necessarily that I always wanted to be involved in social impact, but I always knew that I wanted to be involved in work that was meaningful to me and mission-based. And that led me to a career that ultimately was based in social impact and social purpose. It started in the performing arts, where I joined a great organization called the Celebrity Series up in Boston. And I actually started doing their box office, so selling tickets. And it was a great way for me just to understand the business and see so many different aspects of it. Ultimately, what I loved in that work was the development team and the opportunity to actually be really straightforward and say, this is the type of work that we're doing. These are the resources we need to bring it to life. And then finding people who are similarly missioned and similarly care about that work. And I've always loved that as just a really strong approach to career building, but also community building.
Starting off in the theater space, did you want to be a performer?
I did for a hot second. So I went to Boston College, which is not a conservatory, but I did major in theater. And this is literally the most anticlimactic story ever. But my senior year, I went to one of those open calls for a Broadway production. And I got a call back and they're like, come to New York, bring a headshot, do all this stuff. I had none of it, put together a great team, went to New York, auditioned for a lead in a Broadway show, never heard from them ever again. And I was like, Yep, I love performing. I love doing all that stuff. And I love actually knowing that the inputs that I put into my work will be directly affiliated with the outcomes that happen. And so from that point forward, huge advocate for the arts. Am I singing in my shower every day? You betcha. But is it a career that I would want to pursue? Not for me.
Right. So then what happened after that? You were working with this theater company. What was the next step? And actually, can we take it back? Why did you always want to be involved with a mission-driven organization?
You know, ultimately, it's that I didn't know anything other than being in mission-based work. Everyone in my family really was based in work that reflected their values. And so for me, when I was looking for a career, it wasn't necessarily that I wanted to do something mission-based. It was that I valued the arts so much and wanted to be in a space that allowed those to be built. And really what I loved about the arts was I come from a very small town in Pennsylvania. And so the performing arts was the opportunity that I had to get different worldviews, to step into a different space, to have these different experiences with people in the county versus the town, you know, all of those little opportunities just to open my eyes. And I love that. And that's what really drew me to performing arts in that space. And ultimately, that's what then took me to do something. Because if I love this sense of opening your eyes and seeing what's possible, what I love about Do Something is that it says, great, you see an issue, you want to be part of it. Let's actually give you the tools and the instruction for how to make that change in their community for young people. And so that was what ultimately led me to where I currently am.
Yeah. So you're the VP of business development at dosomething.org, which is coming up to 30 years old, if I'm correct.
You are correct.
Organization. And it is an organization that helps youth volunteer for causes that they care about across multiple issues. Like they were just working on a pride campaign, getting people out to vote, helping people with hunger. And not that you need any incentive to get today's youth to volunteer, but they can also get scholarships through the organization and earn volunteer credits and other prizes and such. So how did you first hear about Do Something and how did you get involved with them?
Yeah. So I first heard about Do Something purely because we are a marketing machine and we have such great connections with influencers, with media outlets. And so even prior to working at Do Something, I was very familiar with the brand and the many different cause areas that they were attached to. So when it was now 6 years ago that they were looking for a vice president of business development, I immediately wanted to put my hat in the ring because I just saw how they were taking social causes and connecting them with real achievable actions that any young person could take wherever they were in the country. And that to me was really, really powerful and a really just exciting value proposition to think about how I can not only support that work, but also bring in businesses who are like-minded to be part of that movement as well.
So what does the role of VP of business development specifically for Do Something, what does that actually entail?
Ultimately, I'm a matchmaker and a translator. And a matchmaker really to the point of saying, as you mentioned, Dale, we work across so many different cause areas. And that's ultimately because we want any young person, whatever they care about, to find a program on our platform that they can say, this speaks to me. I can bring this to my community. I can make an impact. So now we have this fantastic clearinghouse of actions. And my role is to then say, all right, who are the people in the space? Who are the brands in the space who are interested in this work and would want to be affiliated with this work? And then it's my job and my team's job to go out to these different brands and see if they want to be aligned with us and build something together that can really galvanize thousands of young people across the country.
Got it. And how does it work? Do you partner up with a nonprofit working on a particular cause issue first and work out a campaign around that? And then you go out to organizations, for-profit brands that potentially would align with those campaigns?
So for the most part, we're keeping all of it in-house. Do Something itself is a not-for-profit organization, and we have an incredible programming and research team that creates our programs and our campaigns so that we can have our own validation of the work that we're doing and know that the call to action we're creating is impactful. And the reason why we don't necessarily partner with not-for-profits in this space is because as a tech-forward organization, we can be wherever young people are. And the second that you start bringing in partners with physical footprints, that can sometimes limit the availability of our work, limit the participation of young people. That's not to say we don't partner with other not-for-profits, but it's not a requirement of every program that we do.
And over the 6 years, how has it evolved with the brands themselves? Has there been this bigger awareness that they need to be involved in more of these do-good campaigns? Has there been kind of more opportunity? Has your job gotten easier over the last 6 years? Or is there, you know, still quite a bit of education when it comes to working with these brands?
You know, wonderfully, so many brands really have evolved over the past 6 years plus that the education really isn't a requirement anymore. Businesses understand that it's table stakes to have a social purpose mission, and they need to go a lot further beyond that. And where Do Something enters the equation is we can really help them get consumers to tell their story. And that's the value proposition that we can bring, is that we can say, why don't we join forces? We'll reach 50,000 young people who then will be able to go out and tell the story of your brand and say how they were part of bringing your purpose mission to life. And that's really interesting. And that's the value proposition. But certainly over the past few years, there's been a huge evolution of not only what's expected of brands, but you're seeing a lot more comfort from brands and a lot more requirement from young people for brands to go further. No, you know, when I started, so many brands, their social purpose mission was based in a kindness campaign, which is, of course, important. But after the tragic events in Parkland, Florida, so many other things that happened, certainly the murder of George Floyd, you're now seeing that for businesses, they need to have a point of view in some of these national conversations that are critical to young people if they want to appeal to that consumer base and really build a relationship with young people. And that's also where we can step in and do consulting and support to help them really understand how they can be true to their mission, but evolve it to reach a 21st century consumer.
How does the actual process work? So you work out that you have a new campaign starting with dosomething.org, and framing this in the sense, if someone's listening who maybe their own nonprofit and they're looking to, you know, bring on brand partners as well that are aligned with their mission, just wondering if there is, you know, kind of best strategies, a best approach to going out and pitching these brands to partner. How does that look for Do Something?
I mean, the best practice is ultimately starting with who you're going after and why you're going after them. So it's not saying, hey, Do Something's doing this programming around Pride, want to be part of it? But it's saying, I was really impressed with what you did in 2020 around Pride. The fact that you did XYZ really shows that you care about engaging consumers in your work. Do Something shares a similar mindset. Here's what we're looking to do. Is it worth talking about 2021 and seeing if our work might align? That way, you're really showing that you've done your research, you know what their priorities are. And then it really is about matchmaking and saying, you care about this, we care about this. Is it worth 15 minutes to see if we should be doing this work together?
Yeah. Do Something has been around for 30 years. And as you mentioned earlier, it's a pretty well-known brand. If you are starting out with your nonprofit or with any company, to be honest, like I'm doing, we were just talking before we started recording, I'm doing some reach out and biz dev and introducing good gigs to mission-driven companies that have not heard of us. And Karen, it's a slug.
Yeah.
It is cold email. It rarely works. What have you found some of your kind of best approach when you are reaching out to an organization, a brand for the first time?
Oh my goodness. It depends on who you're reaching out to, what the right time is. I mean, ultimately, the things that I try to go with are clarity, vulnerability, and specificity. Clarity and specificity probably are the same thing, but ultimately when I think clarity, it's clarity of why I want to be working with them. So to say really clearly, this is why you're on my list. Vulnerability to say, this is where I am in my stage of development. And then the specificity is saying, this is exactly what I can bring to the table and why I think I could be helpful to your business. But ultimately, when you're doing this outreach, you want to let them know why them, why you, and what you can bring to the table so that they actually have something to assess. Where it's really challenging is when you just keep doing those, if I could just get 10 minutes of your time, we'll figure this out. And it's like, no, you need to make the case why 10 minutes of my time is useful.
I love that. So it's not, you are being really specific when you're reaching out to someone. You have something to offer this company. You have something to help them with. The random email to reach out and to just have a chat, have a call just to see if there's any synergies. That doesn't work.
Like, you tell me what you're offering and then I can say, oh, there might be synergies there. That level of specificity. The other thing that's been really successful with me, but you need to play it strategically, is a really good, are we breaking up email? So an email that just, you know, if you keep doing the nudges instead of saying, following up on my last message, it's like, no, following up to see if you're interested, specific thing that you have to offer. And then ultimately saying, I don't want to keep bothering you. I'm reaching out because of X, Y, Z. Should I just assume you're not interested? I will tell you, the number of people when you change the default setting to I'm going to leave you alone to I'll keep following up, that's when I also see a lot of people actually have their ears perk up because they're like, oh, wait, I've ignored this person for too long. She's walking away. So for you to change the default setting and the default is no, sometimes that's get people to respond.
That is, I'm learning so much, Karen, because I try, like with my follow-ups, if I don't get a response, I try and change it up and be more specific. I won't, you know, say just bumping this to you to the top. I'll add something extra. But like, I've read so many different viewpoints in terms of how many to send and how often when you go to do that breakup email, how many on average kind of follow-up emails have you done?
It depends on how strong a fit it is. If it's a long shot, I might only do 2-3 follow-ups before I just say, I thought that we'd be good for this, but if my assumption's wrong, I won't bother you anymore. If I think we're a really strong fit, then I'm going to keep playing every card I have to get someone to pay attention, not because I want to partner with them, because I'm like, I'm not doing my job because you don't understand why you want to partner with me.
Now, does that include like doing everything you can? Does that include multiple contacts at that organization that you're trying to reach? If someone hasn't been responding to you, do you then do a search for a colleague or someone else on their team?
You want to be respectful about this because you want to be scrappy and make sure that you're talking to the right person. But when you know you're talking to the right person and you're just not getting the response you want, then that's when I really try to do a networked introduction. And I'll go to all of my colleagues and say, who do you know at this business? I'll go to the board of directors. I'll even go to my friends and my college network. Because if you know you're talking to the right person and you just can't get them to respond, then going cold to someone else sometimes looks weird and circular. And I know even just from the receiving end, there's times where literally 10 people in my company will all get the same cold sales email. And when you do that, then that goes back to the first principle where it's like, we said why we found this person, why we're reaching out. And if I reached out to 7 of your colleagues with the exact same message, then it's like, okay, so this really wasn't super specific. You were just fishing and did a really good phishing message.
Got it. Interesting. Good to know. I'll make that note because I've done that.
I mean, ultimately, at the end of the day, you try everything because it's an art and a science.
I mean, completely. And it has changed. So like where I started my career was in ad sales at News Corp. Like MySpace was starting and still around and we were selling ad space. So that was a big part of my job was sales and biz dev. And that was in the day where you would give people a cold, cold call as much as I hated cold call. Like today that is blasphemy really to cold call someone, literally jump on a phone and call them. That's like, so it's evolved quite a bit.
Oh, I mean, even when my best friend calls me without texting me first, I'm like, what are you doing?
Exactly. So it's made it, not that I ever maybe think, you know, cold calls were very successful, but it is challenging these days.
It is. And I would say if you're starting out a business, a single founder, any of that, and I know this is hard, but it's like schedule 30 minutes every day just to do outreach. And the thing with networks is you want to build them before you need them. So if you're not in a phase right now where you actually have a product that you're selling, then go to people who are in the space to just say, hey, I'm trying to create something. Could I get your advice for 15 minutes? And then actually use it for advice. Like you are not trying to sell them. What you're trying to do is get inputs from people who might be relevant to your market in the future. And now you've got those connections and you can leverage them down the line. But that also is an easier way in. In the fundraising community, there's always the saying, when you ask for money, you get advice. When you ask for advice, you get money. And you don't necessarily want to be transactional in this moment, but absolutely ask for advice. Get people thinking about your business, get people on your side. And yeah, assume that the majority of people aren't going to say yes to you. But like, the downside is that you're no further, like, the downside is a no.
Right.
And that's nothing. And the upside is so great.
That right there is the hardest thing to get over for a lot of people, right? Like that fear of rejection. When did you like get over that? Like, because it's tough.
The more you do, the less it matters. Because ultimately, if I reach out to 10 people and one responds to me, then I'm like, oh my God, I got a response. And I think also going into it, knowing that when I'm building something, when I'm building my network, no one necessarily owes me a response. And so it's really just about, there's no downside. Like, worst case scenario, I get ignored. But maybe 5 years from now, they see my name and they go, wait, I feel like you messaged me about something a while back. So in the other place, like, you just don't know where these seeds might flourish. So make sure there aren't spelling errors in the LinkedIn request and then go for it.
And it could be a bit of brand awareness as well, right? Like if you are a new organization, a new company and you're not getting any response, doesn't mean that they didn't read it and potentially you to put that in the back of their mind and saw your brand name and maybe they see you in some press or something like that and they are reminded of it.
There's a great anecdote that I'm going to completely butcher, so I apologize, Seth Godin, in advance. But there was a story that he was telling once about how there was a company that he wanted to earn their business, and literally he would send them postcards from every place he went to keep on their radar, never heard a response. And then I think ultimately one day he actually got a meeting with them and went in, and all of his postcards were on like a pinup board across the business, which I probably butchered that story, but ultimately the takeaway from his message there and what I love with that is like, you don't know who's listening. And just because they aren't responding doesn't mean they're not paying attention.
It's the biggest challenge to get over, like that. And you've got to remind yourself every time you do it, because it is disheartening when you do 10 emails. And even if you do get one, that's awesome. But if you get none from that, it can be really disheartening and you don't want to go and do it the next day. But those little conversations, those little stories that you tell yourself that, you know,
and
they hate you. But, you know.
What I'd say there is just, if you get nothing, one, it takes people a long time to respond because they aren't on your same level of urgency. But two, revisit how you're framing the value proposition. Because even when you're doing these outreach calls, it's still saying the value you're potentially bringing to them is you value their expertise and you value them as a leader. So again, it's still centering what they can do. And like, straight up, nothing makes me more excited to say yes than someone saying, Karen, I admire what you've done. I love your advice. Do you have 15 minutes? And I'm like, thrilled to talk about me for 15. So like, flatter people and let them know that you value what they have to say. And a lot of people will say yes to that.
Right. And that's also key, is take the time. Like if you're doing the cold email, to research the person, go to their Twitter profile, LinkedIn profile, see what they've, stalk them a little and see what their interests are. That just a little, not too creepy. Don't get too creepy, folks. Read any articles that they've written and mention that in the email.
That person hit your radar for some reason. So you can just be honest. Like, you can ultimately say, I don't know why, but you keep showing up on my Twitter feed because we follow a lot of the same people and their likes make your profile show up on mine. Would love to talk about the common interest of blank. Like, it doesn't need to be brilliant. It just needs to be honest.
How do you tell the story behind the mission of Do Something? Is there kind of a process or a succinct way that you put that mission and tell that story in that outreach?
You know, one of the things, and I do this verbally more than in writing, but one of the ways that I explain Do Something, because we are pretty complex, is actually via an analogy. So what I'll often say is that almost everyone knows that you're supposed to start reading books early and often, and the librarian doesn't care what book you read. They just want to encourage that behavior because they know all of the positive life outcomes that come with doing this act. And the same is true for social engagement and civic engagement. And that's what Do Something's showing up for. We want young people to find whatever activities are going to help them get engaged civically and socially in their community. And we want brands that are similarly interested in supporting young people and communities. And usually that's a helpful way, just rather than telling our statistics going into all of the stuff that we'll get to. Because in that first call, it's not about educating them on everything that they need to know. It's about giving them enough information to say, I'm interested, tell me more.
If you're looking at business development as a role, what kind of personality traits are generally successful in that type of role?
Certainly someone who's a strong listener. Because when you're doing business development rather than just sales, you're ultimately going to develop a real partnership. And so you need to be able to listen to the needs of the partner and connect those back to the work and the mission of the organization. So listening and communication is key. I think the other thing that's really important is just being adaptable. For Do Something, we have a very clear brand voice, brand tone, and we're working with brands who have very different tones. And I think it's Mary Barra from General Motors who uses the phrase, dress for the day you have. And that's something that's really crucial for business development, is making sure that you show up in the right way for the partners. And that doesn't mean that we're going to change or compromise our mission as Do Something, but you want to be able to communicate the value that we bring in a language that those partners will understand.
How would you define the differences between a sales role and business development for those that aren't familiar?
As best I understand it, and I am not at all an expert because I haven't been in the sales space, but sales is really a numbers game. Getting in front of as many people as possible, finding people who want to buy what you have to buy, and making those sales. Business development is really about something that has deeper roots. And so it's not just saying that we have a ready-made product, but it's saying we have a vision and we want to develop that vision with you. And so then it's really about finding folks that have strategic alignment. And in that way, our portfolios are much smaller than when we're doing sales. We aren't reaching out to thousands and thousands of people, because what we're doing is figuring who are the best partners for our work and how do we get in front of them in a meaningful way that makes them say, I'm interested to learn more.
If you're thinking about looking for business development positions, I share this kind of advice with a lot of the job seekers on Good Gigs. It's always a question if people are having issues getting interviews or not landing that job. One of my first questions is, are you proactively reaching out to companies that you want to work with? Because a lot of these positions aren't advertised. If someone was looking at doing that from a biz dev position going into an organization, what is key for them to kind of pitch to that company?
I think first it's about setting the goals that you go in with. So if it's a company that you really love and you really want to work with, there's the two time horizons. One of them is the immediate time horizon, which could be a small under-resourced company that's like, no way am I creating a position for you, but thrilled to talk to someone who cares about the work we're doing. And then the long-term goal of maybe there is a role, a volunteer, whatever that may be, opportunity, and going in prepared for both of those conversations and pitching yourself to be prepared for both of those conversations so that you can really say, I love your business. I'm curious about what you're doing. I'd love to be a part of this in any way that is useful to you. And then again, you're saying, here's what I do. Here's why I could be useful. And again, then the worst criteria I'll put is like, and then you need to do this in 5 sentences or less so that someone reads it. But I think it's thinking about those two time horizons, because one of the things that is challenging is when people do that, I'd love advice. I'd love to think what it could be like to join your business. And at the end of it, they're like, oh, and by the way, I'm looking for a job right now. And so this again goes to the, you want to build your network and build these relationships before you're actively trying to work on them. Otherwise, just be transactional and say, I know it says no phone calls. I'm interested in this role. And sometimes people take that call, or other times it helps you know the name. And when you're scanning resumes, they stand out a little bit more.
And even if you just land a role, you've constantly got to be nurturing those relationships that you have, whether you're in a biz dev role or not. And it doesn't hurt to have those relationships because it could help the current role that you're in. And then it could help in a year or two when you look to potentially move to another organization.
Yeah. And I will say, if you hate doing that type of relationship management, this is where social media can be really helpful. Because if you can keep yourself active on Twitter or on LinkedIn, then you're keeping people abreast of the work that you're doing. You're sharing content from your organization. You're able to create that presence. So even though you might not be doing a one-to-one update with people, people are still seeing how you're working, what you're doing, and you're just top of mind.
Definitely. Simon Reynolds, he's this Australian advertising guru, and now he's a bit of a coach, but he would call it recency and frequency. Mm-hmm. Like that's who gets the most work. How recent, it may not be the best person for the job, but the person that will get it will be the most recent that has spoken to that contact, and how frequently they speak to that person as well.
Yep. And I would add one more piece to that equation with all due respect to an expert, but it is also the piece of value, so that you're not just popping up, you know, if every day on Facebook you're like, Tuesday, good morning, not valuable. But if you have that recency and frequency and there's content of value, and it doesn't always need to be high value, but that you're showing like, I'm someone you want to talk to, that's when you got the good stuff.
Don't be getting on Twitter and just trolling single day. you're going to be very active, but you're also going to get very blocked.
Yeah, that's not the frequency we're looking for.
So out of all these hundreds of campaigns, you've obviously seen some incredible change makers coming up in the youth that are involved with Do Something. What do you think the future looks like with these change makers coming into the workforce and potentially going out and starting their own organizations and companies?
I mean, the best part of my job is that when we do these campaigns, one of the ways that we measure impact is having young people tell us why participating in this program was important to them. And the stories they share are just everything from life-affirming to heartbreaking, but ultimately so inspiring. And I just think that this generation has lived through so much disruption, and yet we still see that Gen Z is really taking a collective view in terms of how they're going to improve the world. And you look at climate as an example. Like, they are deeply personally invested in this, not because they want to do good for the world and humanity, but they're like, no, this planet is destroyed. We need to do something for our own livelihood and for our own lives. And just seeing young people come together and say, like, no more BS, like, we need to be addressing these issues and really rising to the challenge, is both heartbreaking that we've left a generation without the infrastructure that's supporting them in this movement, but really so inspiring that young people are just like, all right, give me the baton. We're going to figure this out.
Come on through, Gen Z. It's all up to you now. Where can they go if they haven't heard of Do Something and they want to get involved? Where's the best place for them to go? And do they have to do it through a school program, or they can do it individually?
Yeah. So the whole premise of Do Something is that you can do it individually. So if you just go to dosomething.org, either on your computer or your smartphone, that'll take you to our website, where there's literally over 200 different cause campaigns that you can be a part of and learn more about and implement wherever you are at any time. And that's really the whole purpose of the work, is that we wanted it to be youth-led, so that not only can the young person have an impact in the cause space, but they can also develop those leadership skills and get a sense of what it does look like to build out a social initiative and what it does look like to be an entrepreneur in their community.
Love that. Awesome. And if you are a brand that are interested in getting in front of this youth, best place to also go to dosomething.org?
Yeah. So dosomething.org is going to give you all of that information. And the specific place where I would love you to show up is our sponsorships inbox, which is just sponsorships@dosomething.org. And if you reach out there, then someone on our business development team will be able to follow up with you about ways we could partner.
So cool. So check the show notes. I'm going to have all those links.
Fabulous.
So you can do it. Very easy. Karen, I've got homework to do after this call. You've given me so much information and advice when it comes to biz dev and reaching out, and also some inspiration too, because you can get really down when people don't reply to your emails. So thank you. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing all your insight.
You're so welcome. And ultimately, the thing that I will say to you and to any person who's shy about reaching out, the biggest thing that I will say is call people's bluff. If you are at a conference, if you've overseen something and someone says, follow up with me on LinkedIn, here's my email address, send me a message, call that bluff. I have stood on stages, told 300 people to email me personally, 1, 2 maybe do it. So the low-hanging fruit is if someone says, feel free to reach out, do it.
Do it. So many good takeaways. I do not even know where to begin with my recap. Everything Karen said was pure gold. I especially loved her tip about a really good breakup email if you haven't received a response from someone you're trying to connect with. So many folks don't even bother following up after a no response from one email, but that's a mistake because it could take up to 5 to 7 emails before someone even responds. So definitely follow up and make it a thoughtful follow up and try the breakup email like Karen suggests. I hope you got so many things to try after this episode. I know I certainly have. If you haven't yet, hit subscribe and stick around for more awesome episodes coming up. Until next time, thanks for listening. Keep being you and keep doing good.